Right, turning to Joseph. Life is full of ups and downs, highs and lows, elation and despair. I'm sure we've all experienced that. As a cyclist, I used to say that for every hill going up, there is a down, which unfortunately is the opposite way of talking about highs and lows. But from a cyclist's point of view, if you've got a steep hill coming up, you can guarantee that there's at least a down afterwards when you can relax. And so it is in life that when things are easy and going smoothly, I try to recharge my batteries because around the corner there might be difficult times and I need strength for it. And as we turn to look at the story of Joseph and his walk with God, we've got a very good example of that. I'm not going to go into the history or the background of Joseph, because if you've been here over the last few weeks, you will have heard it, and I think it's well known anyway to a large extent. It's an almost impossible task for me to summarise his life, to summarise his walk with God, but with God's help, I plan to do that. And this is where I'm starting, as I say, a summary of Joseph's life. Now, that is a photograph of cream horns. What on earth has that got to do with Joseph's life? Well, I come from a comparatively large family. I've got four sisters. I'm the second eldest. And my parents, and I'm not saying they were wrong to do this, but it didn't exactly smooth the relationship with my sisters or their relationship with me. I used to think it was everyone else's fault. I now know it was mine as well. But one practice that they had was that every Friday, which I think was payday for my dad historically, he would come home and he'd have a box. And in that box were various things. There'd be one cream horn, and there would be, when there were eventually five children, there would be six other fancy cakes. There'd be, there'd be a cream slice, you know, the slice with icing on the top. I can't remember the correct word. Is it meal feel? I can't remember. There'd be one of those. There'd be what we call traffic lights, pastry with red, green, red, yellow and green jam or sauce on. But everyone wanted the cream horn, and there'd only be one of them. I don't know whether Dad could only ever get one, but he'd never woke up to that fact. But the rule in the household was that the youngest child chose first. So the youngest child would choose the cream horn that all the older children were looking at enviously. And every time this would happen. Now, you could argue, well, when we were the youngest, we got the cream horn. Yeah. Trouble is that after five children, my mum, not surprisingly, stopped having children, and that went on for years and years, that the youngest still chose first. And the rest of us children, in jealous and envy, sort of encouraged mum and dad to reverse the order. Occasionally, please let the oldest ones go elder ones go first. And so my elder sister would then choose the cream horn. I never got the cream horn. So this, to me, is a picture which reminds me of family envy, of jealousy within siblings. And to summarise last week's summary, this is exactly what happened with Jacob, or later called Israel, with him and his children. There's not time to go into the background, but basically you'll remember that he was deceived into marrying Leah. He really wanted to marry Rachel. To make matters worse, Leah was the one that could have children and Leah couldn't. Then when Leah stopped having children, there was then rivalry between the two wives because one wife, Rachel, would offer her maidservant to bear children, and so Leah would then offer her maidservant to bear children to Jacob. And so he ended up, when Joseph was eventually born, Rachel was able to have children, And Rachel had, first of all, Joseph, who, of course, was the firstborn of the favoured wife, and also Benjamin. And there was rivalry between all the siblings, to put it mildly. And it's not very pleasant for the children, to put it mildly. I'll come on to that bit in a minute. I'm going to, first of all, reference... I'm going to be reading odd verses from Genesis to start with. Genesis chapter 37, just one verse, verse 4. And this sums up the feeling between the brothers. In fact, I'll read verse 3 for context. Now Israel, that's Jacob, loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. That's the coat we refer to as of many colours. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him, and that's the him there's Joseph, and could not speak a kind word to him. The brothers, or half-brothers technically, couldn't speak a kind word to Joseph. Okay, so Joseph then makes it worse. He had a dream. I'm not going to read this out, but you can see it in the next few verses. And tactlessly, foolishly, I don't know what the word is, he tells that dream to his brothers, and then a subsequent dream about his parents, which basically told everyone that his brothers, his mother, and his father would all bow down and worship him. Now, they didn't like him before that. Now, they hate him even more. I'm not joking, researching this talk was like reading a series of scripts which somehow combined EastEnders with Dallas. It's a real convoluted story, but this is history. And it's no wonder that the brothers, half-brothers, I shouldn't include Benjamin, his true brother, in that, his brothers hated him. And so what they did was that they would go off and do their own things. His father was very protective, I think, of it. And amongst other things, the half-brothers went away looking after the flock of sheep. Joseph and Benjamin, his true brother, stayed behind. Benjamin was too young, was told that Joseph was aged 17 at this stage, and his father sends him to his half-brothers to find out how they're doing. So he has a long journey, he catches up with them. But before he even catches up with them, they see him coming in the distance, and they plot to kill him. Now, Reuben, coincidentally, I think it's significant, he is the firstborn of Leah, so he's the eldest son. Reuben is able to persuade them not to kill him, but just to abandon him. They take his coat off of him, that precious, highly, richly decorated coat, ornamented coat, take it off of him, and they throw him into a cistern, which is basically a pit in the ground you can't climb out of, and it was a dry water storage system. They throw him in there. The Bible tells us that Reuben planned to rescue him later. Now, is this because Reuben didn't hate him so much? Well, I think what it was that Reuben realised that if he rescued him, he'd then be in his very good books with his father. So I think that was the thinking behind it. But whilst Reuben was elsewhere, I say that because we read that he was surprised to find he was no longer there, the other brothers, half-brothers, decide that instead of killing him, they are going to sell, or abandoning him, they are going to sell him to some slavers. They see some merchants approaching, and they sell him for 20 pieces of silver, the price of a young male dedicated to God at the time. They sell him to the slavers, thus thwarting Reuben's plan. I did say it was like EastEnders, didn't I? Reuben's plan to rescue him. And what they do, they get the coat of many colours or the ornamented coat, they kill a goat or a sheep and use the blood to stain the coat so that they can go back and tell Dad, a wild animal has killed your favourite son. And then, of course, he will be focusing on all of them, and the jealousy would then be over. So that's what happens to Joseph. He is sold into slavery by his brothers, by his family. You can imagine how he felt at this time. Once highly favoured, I wouldn't say a life of luxury, but certainly he was getting the best that his family could provide for him, that his father could provide for him, and now suddenly he's the lowest of the low, a slave. But we read, time and time again, the Lord was with Joseph. I've put down three references there to it. You can read them for yourself. The Lord was with Joseph. When I was preparing for this, I thought, I know what I'll do. I look at the times that God spoke to Joseph, and I can't find any, or at least no actual words recorded. Okay, I thought, I look at times that Joseph prayed to God, and I couldn't find any. But what this story tells us is that the Lord was with Joseph. And it's more than that. I'll come on to that later. So he's sold into slavery. And this is where the EastEnders come, Dallas come, Dynasty come, whatever. Story takes a turn. He finds favour in the house of Potiphar, who is an entrusted rich man, who's fairly high up socially in Egypt. He finds favour with him because the Lord is with him. He's put in charge of the other slaves, in charge of his household, and he's trusted. Joseph, who's described as very good-looking, is seen as very attractive by Mrs. Potiphar, if I can use that phrase, if you don't know her name, who tries to seduce him. And we read time and time again that he rejects her advances. And it comes to a head when she grabs him, he refuses to sleep with her, and he flees, leaving his coat. Clothing keeps on appearing in this story, and it does throughout the family's history, actually, if you look at it. Leaves his cloak in the hands of Mrs. Potiphar, who now, frustrated, lies and claims that he tried to rape her. What happens? He's arrested and put in prison. Just stopping there, this is puzzling. It's puzzling because the law at the time in Egypt was that this was an immediate death sentence. It's a huge breach of trust. If Potiphar had drawn out a spear and put it through Joseph's heart, no one would have complained. Why did Potiphar do what he did? No. You know, people with far more wisdom and interest in theology, or far more wisdom than I've got, and with an interest in theology, have come up with various theories. It's possible, and these are not, don't take these as being true, but these might explain it. It's possible that Mrs. Potiphar had a reputation for having affairs with slaves. You can guarantee that slave gossip being what it is, that it would have got back to Potiphar at some stage. Why did he punish him at all? Well, perhaps he had to. Perhaps Mrs. Potiphar was a close relative of someone high, perhaps even the Pharaoh. Imagine if she were the niece of the Pharaoh. You had to do something. You couldn't ignore it. But clearly, Potiphar had a great respect for Joseph because he allowed him to live. And we know this because we read about the cupbearer and the baker. I'll come on to them in a minute. And they were in prison, and 3 days later, one of them was dead. Execution was usually quick. But we know that Joseph was in prison for 2 years. Again, can you imagine how he felt? One minute, he's high, trusted in a rich man's house. Yes, a servant or a slave. Next minute, he's falsely accused of a crime, and he's done the exact opposite when he refused to breach the trust that his employer had with him, or owner had with him. And suddenly he's in prison. Highs and lows. He's down at another low again. But again, this is where we read, again, that God was with Joseph. The cupbearer and the baker, you know the story well. They have dreams, similar dreams. The figure three appears in both of them. First of all, the cupbearer, three branches bearing grapes, squeezed out into drink. What does it mean? Joseph tells him, because Joseph's got the ability, the God-given ability, to interpret dreams. Joseph tells him it means that in 3 days' time, you're going to be restored and we'll be back serving the Pharaoh. Baker's dream, 3 trays of loaves, birds come along and peck at and eat the bread. What does that mean? In 3 days' time, Joseph tells him, you will be taken and killed for your crime. Exact opposite, as I say, similar dreams. And Joseph very wisely says to the cupbearer, you know, remember me when you're restored to Pharaoh, put in a good word for me. Well, the cupbearer doesn't. For 2 years, Joseph is languishing in prison, knowing that he could be executed at any time. But obviously, it might not have been made not to execute him, but it certainly wasn't made that he was to be executed. I'm sorry to put it in that negative way. But poor Joseph, he must again been in the depths of despair, or would have easily been for him to be in the depths of despair. But we read again, the Lord was with him. And what happens 2 years later? And by now, Joseph is in his 30s. Last time we saw him, he was 17, and going to meet his brothers. He's now in his 30s. He's been in prison for 2 years, 2 full years plus. And Pharaoh has a dream. 7 fat cows eaten by 7 thin cows. What does it mean? Now Pharaoh goes to his wise men, his magicians, his advisors, and say, right, what does this mean? They probably said anything that they thought would do them good. Obviously, Pharaoh knew that it wasn't true. They were unable to interpret the dreams, and it troubled him greatly. This dream had a message for him. It troubled him greatly. And the cupbearer, who's by the Pharaoh's side, suddenly says, oh gosh, I'd forgotten about him. He'd slipped my mind. That chap, Joseph, tells Pharaoh about it, and Pharaoh calls Joseph out of prison. And I want to look at that in a bit of detail. We now turn over to chapter 41. I'm going to read from verse 14. Chapter 41. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. I like that detail. You know, he's made decent for his audience with the Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream and no one can interpret it. But I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Joseph says something quite remarkable to my mind. He says, I cannot do it, Joseph replied to Pharaoh, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. He acknowledges that it's not him that's got the answer, but God. As I say, I can't find any actual words that God spoke to Joseph, but this speaks of a very close relationship with God, doesn't it? He knows that his power, his ability, is from God, and he's not going to falsely claim, I can do it, Pharaoh, I'm a fantastic person. He's saying, no, God can do it, but here it comes. I think that's wonderful. It's humility when most people in despair would have wanted to promote themselves as being the answer. No, God is the answer. And so Pharaoh explains the message to Joseph. Joseph explains that the 7 fat cows of 7 years of abundance in the harvest, followed by 7 years of famine. And again, it must be the wisdom of God. He advises Pharaoh, What you need to do, and this is in verse 34, to basically stock up during the years of abundance and then distribute the food as is needed. Spread it out, otherwise it'll be disaster. Verse 37. The plan put forward by Joseph seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his officials. So Pharaoh asked them, "Can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God?" I find that actually quite amazing too. Pharaoh acknowledges that Joseph has got the Spirit of God. I think that's quite incredible. And so he is put in charge. The term I've seen used is a vizier, a high-ranking official. He's put in charge. He's only second to the Pharaoh. And he's given this very elevated position. It's actually Joseph's decision who gets the grain and for how much. Chancellor of the Exchequer, I don't know what you'd describe it. Very high position. Very, very high position. Another of these highs in Joseph's life. He's now in a palace. He's given a wife by the Pharaoh. Her name is, unfortunately, quite close to Potiphar, but it's not. It's not any relation to Potiphar. He gives him a wife, and he has children with him, with her. And life is comfortable and sets down. But Joseph realises and acknowledges throughout that it's God who's done it. And we then get a long, convoluted story. I'm not going to even begin to try to interpret it to you about silver being put in sacks, family coming back. What happens is that Joseph's brothers, or half-brothers, come to Egypt. I notice that Benjamin isn't there. Benjamin is now the favoured child, I suggest, and is kept back by Jacob, by Israel. Brothers are sent, come to Joseph. They don't recognise him. You can imagine Joseph as an Egyptian, probably a shaved head. He is now aged 30. As far as they're concerned, Joseph is dead. He's probably at some distance to them, probably high on a throne, very ornate decorations, jewellery, the works. They have no reason to suspect it's Joseph. They have no reason to suspect that this man can understand Hebrew. And so when they chat amongst themselves, they have no idea that Joseph is hearing and understanding what they're saying. And he doesn't disclose who he is. And by various contrivances, he eventually persuades Benjamin to come to Egypt. This is his full brother. And by deception, again, deception throughout the family, he gets to keep Benjamin and put pressure on the half-brothers. You could say he torments them a little bit. That's probably a fair summary. So I'm not going to go into it now, otherwise I will go on until the Hebron Church come here this afternoon. But you've got Joseph not being recognised by his brothers. And, as I say, there's various deceptions, various contrivances. And now, if you will turn to chapter 45, we are approaching what I think is the climax. And it's this, the heading in my Bible is Joseph Makes Himself Known. At this stage, before now, I've asked you to view things from Joseph's point of view about the despair and the elation. Now I want you to think as if you were one of those half-brothers who had sold Joseph into slavery and had told father that he'd been killed. Try and put yourself in their shoes when this happens. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants, and he cried out, this would be in Egyptian, "Make everyone leave my presence." So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard all about it. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" First question. But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come close to me." You may remember that picture of him high up on a dais. He's now saying, come closer, look at me. When he had done so, he said, I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now, do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. Wow. He's forgiven them. He acknowledges that it was God's plan that all this terrible thing would happen to him. And his brothers are terrified. He goes on in verse 8. So then it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh. Lord of his entire household, and ruler of all Egypt. Now hurry back to my father and say to him, this is what your son Joseph said. God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Don't delay. It's quite incredible. No condemnation. Yes, he's teased them, tormented them would be a better word. He's called them anguish. But here, he describes himself as father of Pharaoh. I suspect that the Pharaoh may have died and there's now a young son on the throne. But that's just speculation on my part. Describes himself as a father to Pharaoh. He could order them all to be taken out and to be tortured to death. But he doesn't. He wants his father to be reassured. I am still alive. The son you loved is still alive. And you get the family moving to Egypt. This actually sets the ground for the Exodus, Moses, later, many generations down the line. And you get the news broken to Israel, Jacob, that he is alive. The delight. He actually says, great, I can go there before I die and see my son again. It's wonderful. This is verse 28. I'm convinced my son Joseph is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. And so the whole family moves to Israel. But it's clear that throughout the famine, throughout this time, that the brothers are very concerned, still concerned. Because what happens inevitably is that Jacob dies in due course. I love the way it's described. When Jacob had finished giving instructions to his son, he drew up his feet into the bed, breathed his last, and was gathered to his people. Joseph threw himself upon his father and wept, and actually had the body embalmed and preserved, planning to take it back to his home back in Canaan. I'm not going to go into the detail of that. Jacob is now dead. The brothers now think perhaps Joseph was only being kind to us while the father still was alive. Verse 15 of chapter 50. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, what if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrongs we did to him? So they sent word to Joseph saying, and this is a lie, by the way, your father left these instructions before he died. This is what you are to say to Joseph. I ask you to forgive your brothers the sins and the wrongs they committed in treating you so badly. Now please forgive the sins of the servants of the God of your father. When the message came to him, Joseph wept. Now Joseph had been speaking to Jacob. Jacob would have told him that. And I suspect that Joseph knew that once again his half-brothers were lying to him. And he wept because there's no need for them to lie. In fact, his brothers, perhaps realising that he doesn't sound convinced, they throw themselves down before him. Remember the prophecy? We are your slaves, they said. They're willing to be slaves rather than be killed, which is what they deserve for what they had done to Joseph. But Joseph said to them, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done. The saving of many lives. So then, don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children. And he reassured them and spoke kindly to him. full forgiveness. And as you read on, you'll see that that's exactly what he did. He forgave his half-brothers, despite all the wrong that they'd done for him. Despite the lies that they said in desperation about father telling them to tell Joseph to forgive them. Despite all those ups and downs, Joseph knew that God was in charge and that God had caused these terrible things to happen to him for a purpose. If he'd stayed in Potiphar's house, he wouldn't have been able to save the thousands of lives by controlling the grain and telling Pharaoh the interpretation of his dream. He wouldn't be able to save the lives of his half-brothers and brother. And you've got to remember that those half-brothers and brother, the 12 of them, including Joseph, are the 12 tribes of Israel. They are the fathers, if I can use that phrase, of the entire Jewish nation. It was God's plan that they would be saved, and it was God's plan that Joseph would go through these hardships. If he'd stayed in Potiphar's house in that relative luxury, it would have happened. It was necessary to bring him low again, to raise him up even higher. So when things go wrong in your life, it's very easy to think to yourself, it's not fair. As a child, I used to say that all the time to my parents. I'm sure that my children said that to me as well, but I'm not sure. It never seems fair from your perspective, does it? And it's very easy for us to say that to God. It's not fair. I don't deserve this. But God's in control and he knows what's best for us. But the other thing that I want to finish off with is that there are tremendous parallels with Christ's life in that story of Joseph. This isn't a complete list by any stretch of the imagination. But a father sent his son to the hating brothers who sold him for silver. God sent his son to a sinful world, and Jesus was sold for 30 pieces of silver. Joseph left home to be the lowest of the low, that's in being sold as a slave, but was raised to be in the highest place. Jesus became human and was raised back into heaven. Joseph was innocent, but was falsely accused and punished for something he had never done. Jesus, the sinless one, was punished for what we had done wrong. But above all, his half-brothers deserved hatred and revenge, and no one would have said Joseph was wrong to do it. But instead, they received forgiveness and grace. Grace being totally undeserved gift. Something which isn't worked for. They had done nothing to deserve the elevated position they had in Egypt. They had done everything to deserve death. But he didn't just forgive them. He showed them grace. And that's what God has done for each of us.